Yearning to play a few rounds of Gwent. That ought to set me straight.
Welcome to Commander's Horn, episode 33. Today, our guest is partnered streamer and original Gwentleman, Swim, who joins us to talk about his travels through the beta, the tournament scene, and of course, Scoia'tael. Check the show notes for this one because we cover a lot. Also, is Gwent getting into mobile? All this, some Crocos and some Doggos on this episode of Commander's Horn. Welcome back to episode 33 of Commander's Horn, a weekly Gwent podcast. I am one of your hosts, Dane McBeard, and I'm joined, as always, by the groom-to-be, Grey Boxer. Josh, how are you today?
Oh, I'm doing well. I'm playing quite swimmingly, and I'm having a great time podcasting with you, as always, McBeard. And soon we'll be having a great time enjoying a wedding together. We're not getting married, folks. No. I'm getting married, and McBeard's invited. We're going to have a Commander's Horn wedding in about 3 weeks, and preparations are lining up right now, man. We're getting really close to the date. I'm really excited. Lady Boxer is, she's really keen to get us hitched here.
Yeah, we're going to have to, like, light up our social media accounts, take lots of pictures. Going to be fun. You're probably counting the days, putting those big red X's on the calendar.
Yeah, there's like, I think it's 18 days left or something like that. And I,
18 days.
Who's counting though, right? So, yeah, guys, McBeard will be there in attendance. Your whole Commander's Horn team is going to be here. It's going to be awesome. What have you been up to,
McBeard? We'll be next to each other, and we won't be across the world. We'll actually be, you know, relatively close to where we are right now.
Well,
and, I'm very excited.
The Commander's Horn studios, I mean, right now.
Well, those live in our hearts. I think we know that.
So tell me a little bit about your week, McBeard. How's it going?
Week's going pretty good. So I have been playing Gwent, as you might imagine.
Oh.
And I think lately, so I've been playing Monsters for, you know, the last little bit, obviously, and it's been doing okay for me. But then I just decided on a whim to switch to Northern Realms, a full test list, making use of Trebuchet's Medics, Dandelion, and other really like high threat units like Bloody Baron is one of them. And, you know, Priscilla and King of Beggars, they do their work as well. And basically, the idea is that you get a lot of units out to swarm the board. You find something that sticks, either Baron or Dandelion or maybe something else. You bring up the buffs, you win round one. And then in round two, your medics just come and bring everything back. Your Nanakin can bring back your King of Beggars, which can maybe grab a medic, which can then grab Priscilla. And then maybe Priscilla can grab something else. And it's not entirely uncommon just to run wild with just a couple of cards, and you can be really aggressive and you can win two games in a row. And I'll be happy to supply my guide on this deck in the show notes, but I'm loving it right now. I think we topped out at about 4650 on the leaderboard at some point, which is, I gotta say, the highest I've
ever
been.
There.
So
that's and not only that, McBeard, that's up there for full test, isn't it?
I don't know. I know Henselt's really popular, but full test is generally not as popular, but being able just to double down on a Trebuchet or double down on a Reaver Scout or double down on a Field Medic, all great choices. And sometimes your utility units, in my case, it's a Blue Stripe Scout. You can double down on those too in a pinch. And you know, it's full test is always going to get you the value of like a really good bronze card when you play them.
Yeah, because Northern Realms is sort of chocked full with really good bronze cards. The Reaver Scouts are also a good pick if you're in a pinch and you want to get that final bit of deck thinning in case your hand is kind of bricked. And like you say, the Trebuchets are a really perfect target for them too because of how much value they provide, especially early on. So it's really, really great bronzes. And that's interesting you've been able to take full test so high up because really everybody seems to be taking the safe route with Henselt right now.
Mm. Henselt's still tough to beat. Henselt can be a tough matchup with my deck, but that's when you start putting in tech choices like Manticore Venom. At one point, I had Triss in there just to like have an instance of damage that remove 4 or more. I do run Vernon already. I felt Triss was overkill. And then there's Dimeridium Bomb that kind of comes in and out. Sometimes I'll replace Roach for it, but I don't really know.
Yeah.
I don't really know where the magic moment is, because you do see a lot of Henselt, and Henselt's very strong, but you see mostly Scoia'tael, and the list as it stands is stronger against Scoia'tael, but Henselt's a pain. What can I say?
Oh, yeah. It's just, it's too much to try to get a good value out of Dimeridium Bomb just to say, hey, Dimeridium Bomb is the answer to Henselt. No, it isn't, because you need a deep round. You need to be able to hold a dead card for long enough to get good value out of it. Dimeridium Bomb is really rough. However, we know that Dimeridium Bomb now does affect, you know, 5 adjacent units on a row. And speaking of rows, we've got Swim on the show today.
Yeah.
And you might have heard of him and his dwarf deck that stacked rows and stacked MMR and stacked the tiers of his opponents. And he's on the show today talking about a new deck that he's working on that features some dwarves. And I've been talking to him a little bit about it, and I've been giving dwarves a shot again. And I don't know about you, McBeard, but you don't see a lot of dwarves on the ladder right now. And it's almost like a surprising thing to see almost a basic Scoia'tael removal deck have a few dwarves thrown in. Well, there's another way you can build this deck, and is you can just sort of build it like it was last patch with the row stacking. A lot of these row stacking cards were changed with the positioning patch to no longer affect the entire row, like your Hawker Healers and so on. But those cards are still pretty good, and nobody uses them anymore. So there's a deck that features some Hakim Defenders, you know, by my beard, and got a few more. You can throw in a few extra dwarves in there for extra flavor, but mostly you're going to run row stacking kind of cards and just stagger your dwarves and say, remove these dwarves or you're going to have a problem. Because Scoia'tael can still generate card advantage, and if it can have the carryover strength from these Mahakam Defenders, it's still a really competitive deck. So I haven't been able to, it hasn't been winning a lot versus the Scoia'tael control deck that everybody sees everywhere, but everything else is doing quite well against. So I'm really enjoying that. I'm glad to be back in my, I'm glad to be donning the beard and war axe again.
This episode of Commander's Horn is recorded on Tuesday and will be posting on Wednesday. You can find Commander's Horn on iTunes, Stitcher, and other podcasting apps. It's always nice to hear what the Gwent community has to say about the game, and we also like to shout out a little mail call. What's your favorite artwork in the game? Send your emails to commandershornpodcast@gmail.com or tweet at us at Commander's Horn.
Yeah, and Commander's Horn, as always, is supported by our commandos. I'm sorry, commandos! Patrons over at patreon.com/commandershorn. Thanks to everyone for helping us make the best content we can.
Yeah, so stay tuned to our strategy section with Swim. We'll be talking in-depth Scoia'tael, kind of past, present, and future, yeah, with our guest Swim. And of course, he'll join us beforehand, and we'll be talking about kind of his experience with Gwent, his experience with Challenger as well, and his experience in kind of jumping into the content that he's been creating. But before that, there's a couple of things to talk about today, and we'll be talking about that on the news right after this break. So the truth is about the news section that we have prepared for you at length is that there's not that much news right now. I think we could probably say that there has been one breaking story, if you want to call it a story. I think we're going to call it a story today. Grey Boxer, how do you feel about the news that you saw today on Tuesday?
So it looks like CD Projekt Red is looking for a developer, and not just any developer or programmer. They're looking for someone who possesses an understanding of mobile game development, and they're looking for specific skills with specific programs that are related to mobile networking. And if you want to know more about this, check out Merchant's video. He just posted one up on his YouTube page, and I believe it's called Gwent Mobile Client Revealed. What do you think about this, McBeard? Are we ready for mobile in Gwent?
It's a really smart video. Definitely worth your time to check out that video about the mobile development. And just for some perspective here, if they're looking for people to do something like this, and we can make the assumption that Gwent is something that is going to be explored in the mobile space, just keep in mind that, and you know, the golden example right now, obviously, and probably will be for a very long time, will be Hearthstone, because Hearthstone does have a mobile client. The mobile client for Hearthstone wasn't available for about a year after their launch, like post-open beta launch. So if you are excited about a mobile version and you're asking when a mobile version might be coming out, it's probably not going to be for a really long time, possibly a year, year and a half. The good news is they might be exploring that territory. I mean, that would suggest that.
Yeah, that'd be incredible. And that's one of the things that a lot of people are asking for. And I know it's going to be a ton of work to develop a game as complicated and as detailed as Gwent for mobile, for that small screen and so forth. But so if you're excited about the mobile version of Gwent, go ahead and settle into your Snuggie, kick your feet up, and wait a while. But until then, we've got Swim in the studios, a guy who you may have seen in his own Snuggie.
Swim is joining us in the Commander's Horn studios, and we are excited to sit down with him and talk to him about the old days, the days in which closed beta had just opened up. And Swim is an old friend of mine. We met in one of the very first tournaments for Gwent as well. He's been thinking about Gwent a lot, and he's got some thoughts about Scoia'tael and a new deck he's dying to talk about. Stay tuned to our interview with Swim after this.
This is nice.
Yes, Swim, welcome to the Commander's Horn Studios. Perhaps you might want to describe the studios as you may see it in your mind's eye. It's something we do with our guests. We started.
Oh, there's a lot of, there's an ale of, shoehorn of ale, or,
Helps get you drunk and get your shoes on.
Shoehorn. I don't know. What, Greybox, you sent Retha as a thing. Wasn't it a thing of something?
Yeah, like, so it was a double entendre. It was a giant horn of ale, but it was the horn that has the tip, so it's the end of the horn that has the tip, so it looks like the commander's horn, but then it's also an ale horn, so it was kind of a hey, this is the commander's horn. That's what he thought it was. I was like, Rethus, you drink ale from this.
So like a cornucopia, but for, you know, alcohol,
for drinking. Yeah.
You can't weave your ale horns, though. You've got to cut them off.
That's true.
You can't put them down anywhere. I think that they'd be really inconvenient, like only for parties.
You got to get a holster for it.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Swim, for joining us on the podcast. Great to have you on.
Oh, yeah. Great to be on, McBeard.
We've known each other for a little bit of time, I guess.
Quite a while, actually. Beta Brawl 2?
Yeah, Beta Brawl 2, yeah, I guess relative to Gwent's lifespan for a very long time, because we met in Beta Brawl 2, yeah, it was before tournaments were, I guess, kind of more reorganized and administrated and stuff by the Gwentlemen are now, but I do have those VODs somewhere, and Swim, you did beat me, but we did meet in the finals, so that felt pretty good.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember that day?
Roping.
So much roping.
It's hard to forget. That was the longest match. I'm just glad it was the final, so nobody had to wait for us to finish.
It's true. Yeah, and it was like it wasn't even live anyway. This is before, like, the best I could do ever was like a Skype screen share on the previous one, but it's still good. It still happened.
Oh, I remember the beta brawls now. It's all coming back.
We met in one of them too, Swim. It was
I remember that. That was 1.5, I think.
Yeah, that was ages ago.
Yeah, I specifically remember that match very, very well. And I think you uploaded it to YouTube or something, too.
I think it's the oldest video in my my YouTube channel literally has, I think, that video and then Gwent Folktales.
Yeah, that was literally, Gray Buxer, that was the day where I learned card advantage doesn't matter. That was honestly an historic day.
Like, that was insane.
So Gray Boxer goes 5 cards down to beat me. or something, right? It was five, wasn't it?
So I had miscalculated. So this is early on. So Swim is getting started. I'm getting started. And I thought, okay, I've got like 24 points to make up round one. This is Skellige. I can probably do that with two cards. I was down like 34 points. And so I had no idea how I was going to catch up. And I started playing cards into it. Then I realized I was never going to catch up without going like four or five cards down. So I had to do it.
At that point, I mean, once you're committed, you're committed.
And the outcome of that game was?
he daisy chains like four Freyas in round three, and it doesn't matter. That was old Skellige. Ah, those were the days.
Yeah, that was, I think round two, all I did was throw out a Savage Bear, and it just messed up everything you tried to do, because you were playing Northern Realms back when Priscilla was a one.
I remember that.
And I think you RNG medicked her back, and then she just died again. Oh, back when medics could pull silvers, the good old days.
We've seen a lot of patches almost, for sure.
That was almost not even that long ago.
Like, it didn't seem that long ago.
Well, in terms of all these changes, like Freya's not being able to chain and old Priscilla, the field medics being able to res silvers was kind of recent. Like that died off in what,
two
like January?
Two patch cycles, I want to say.
Something
yeah.
like that?
There's a Nilfgaard patch, I want to say.
Yeah,
but didn't it live in like the afterlife of the PS4 technical beta where it's a four strength card that could pull silvers?
It's Purgatory McBeard.
This weird, bizarre Gwent universe where some changes were made and some changes weren't.
Listen, everybody begged for PS4 and they got it.
Yeah, they got it, all right. So Swim, we're talking about stuff like from a while ago, and this was like back in Discord before the Croco was even like a sparkle in your eye. You had like a different icon. It was just like a snake eye or something like that.
Oh, no. It was a crocodile, dude.
Oh, it was a crocodile's eye. Oh.
Yeah, it was.
So it's always been Croco.
Oh, it always. Yeah. But it was definitely less distinguishable, less iconic.
Can you talk to us about what the crocodile means to you?
What does the crocodile mean to me? I don't know.
This is why people are tuning in.
It's honestly, that's a tough one. It's just a thing. Little crocodile.
We aren't talking until you answer the question.
Okay, let me hear. It's a, I don't know. I think they're kind of cute. They're like my spirit animals. They're like a little, you know. It's like they're like land snakes. Well, I mean they're in the water, so they're, and also snakes are on land. So I guess that description. Well, I don't know. It's like.
It's perfect.
You cute little 800-pound lizards.
Water lizards. Water lizards.
Land snakes. No, it's perfect. That's the answer I was hoping for. So that's how you were known on Discord, I guess. How you were known kind of in your community. And you're really present in the community. You're really active on Discord. You stream daily. You're putting out YouTube videos now. At what point did you notice that you were starting to like really grow in popularity? Because you've gotten there. You've gotten there recently. In your time slot, you're top of the directory every time, and it didn't happen over like a long period of time. It happened gradually, but it was like a couple of weeks there, and then all of a sudden there you were, and you were very well branded right away. You just kind of showed up there.
A funny thing that I don't really know what happened. It's really anyone's guess. I don't know. Like, a large part of it was just getting that schedule. I mean, I know that's kind of the number one thing people say, you know, you should really do that. But I don't know. When I made the jump from having, like, a set schedule and streaming quite frequently, my viewership doubled, I guess. I don't know. People started watching more.
It's the magic of Twitch, right? It's just, you know, sometimes you just got it, right?
and it's not only that you're not only known as a streamer, but you're also known as a deck builder. So your decks, sort of due to this matrix you have of popularity and how good the decks are, they're often the top on Gwent EB. Sometimes all of them are the top of Gwent EB, and all you can see is Swim's XYZ decks. So.
I did not mean for that to happen. I like literally when that happened, I know the time period you're talking about. There were like four of them. I only like only like one or two of those was an original deck. The rest of them were just variations on other things, and I just kind of wanted them to be there so that I could like reference them, but they all ended up at the top, and it honestly, I don't know, it felt kind of weird.
And so, like, when you have this the blank deck builder open, what's your approach to putting the first cards in? And then from there, like, a lot of times you develop your decks on stream. So how do you start out, though?
Ooh. That's a big, big question. I don't know. I mean, you kind of start out with an idea of an archetype. And an archetype, it's very complicated how cards interact with each other in this game. For me, I always just take basically an existing archetype and start to modify it. I never really feel like I start from scratch, although some ideas do tend to like kind of make me want to build a deck around that interaction, but even then, it's never an idea that kind of extends the entire deck. I just start with a framework and basically really, really try to objectively evaluate a lot of the options, because I feel like a lot of the cards that sometimes I end up putting in or end up cutting seem like very insane decisions, and in a majority of cases they are, but it's important to be kind of objective and not necessarily fall into the trap of like dismissing cards as being bad or keeping cards as kind of auto includes, because different things work for different decks.
Yeah, I was having a conversation with somebody about this today. Somebody asked me what's better, consume monsters with Vren and Arrakis Behemoth, or consume monsters with more of like a Necker focused package. And I know that both of those decks are played at the top. So it came down to me just saying, I think it's really honestly what you prefer to play. How much do you think playstyle really factors into how well you can pilot a deck? Or do you really think that there are best choices?
Oh, I think it factors in immensely. Although I also think there do happen to be technically best choices, but I do agree with your sentiment of just kind of telling people to play more what they feel like than what's good, because honestly Gwent is a very balanced game, and not even necessarily that all of its cards are super balanced, but the format of the game, with cards being worth points and that points being having a small variation on it, makes for really kind of even matches and close comparisons between cards, right? So you end up in a situation where, like, yeah, some decks are better than others, but it's by a really, really small margin. And that's always a thing that it's important not to forget that, because, you know, ultimately, like you said, you should just play what you think is better or what you tend to play well. I do think that in response to your question, how your playstyle is can really, really impact how you even go about building a deck, for sure.
And cool. I was gonna say that I don't want to skip too far ahead because we have a really, really good launch into our strategy section, but I'm gonna do it anyway because it's a perfect time. So for you, you love Scoia'tael, or maybe Scoia'tael love you. In either case, it's a situation where you are performing incredibly well with this faction, and you've done so consistently now for months. So what do you think it is about Scoia'tael as a faction that appeals to you, and how are you able to build decks that seem to work so well with this faction?
They're very good in a very versatile way. Honestly, I mean, Scoia'tael has the kind of package that just kind of makes them really good for consistently being at the top of competitive play. I think it large in part comes down to Elven Mercenary and Aglaeus. I mean, I might say that like right now Saskia is a huge part of that package, but even back in the Scoia'tael Marjo days, Saskia was a 5 back then and didn't really see play. Not necessarily because of that value, but
Saskia was a 9 back then.
No, she was a 5 at one point. I liked her at 5.
Not at the Marjo patch.
You're right.
When she was a human, she was 5. Yeah. I always liked Saskia, honestly. I always thought that she was pretty good, and I always thought Saskia was a pretty decent card, personally. I always liked the Scoia'tael Golds, and I think Elven Mercenary is a big deal just because it's the one card that allows you to pull specials out, and you can have three of them, really. And it makes Skoytel's deck building just so much more different just by the existence of that card. Right. And then Aglaze kind of just takes it into overdrive by enabling you to replay some of the silver ones.
Yeah, you get to bank them, basically. Yeah. That's something that you guys brought up on the meta snapshot this week, was the banking of your specials with the control Skoytel and then being able to pull them back out with a Glaze.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
It's
a really big deal. If I had to attribute Skoytel's success to two things, I would say it's mercs and the ability to carry over value. And the ability to carry over value can be stated in two different ways in terms of the current cards that exist, which are Dragoons and Mahakam Defenders. And of course, we're seeing Dragoons very popular right now, and we're seeing Mahakam Defenders were very popular last patch. And if you go back far enough, you know, they were very effective with Marja, which was, of course, neutral, but they could kind of use it the best.
Mm-hmm. So we're looking forward to talking all about Skoytel with you a little bit later, because it's just, you know, it's a slower news week. So we figured we could just take a little bit extra time and do some strategy with you as well, and talk about some of the new stuff you're working on with Skoytel. But before we do that, let's talk about the Gwendolyn. So the Gwendolyn is the team of content creators, writers, and competitive players, some tournament organizers. I mean, you all have different roles, and you've been part of that formed team from the start. Do you have a role specifically in that team? Do you each sign up for projects? How do things work at the Gwendolyn?
Yeah, we all have specific projects we're in charge of. It used to be a little different. We used to kind of just do our own things. Like, anyone who remembers far back enough will know that I wrote 3 articles back in the day, including the original blacklisting article. Which I think was
The Art of Mulligan.
Yeah. It's a bit of a cheesy name. But I don't know. It was very kind of almost groundbreaking back in the day, just because that wasn't like a publicly known mechanic before that.
Still don't know. People still don't know.
No, that's true. That's true. Anyway, the article helped a lot with that. And these days, my role is more about handling things internally in terms of, like, you know, we do like team meetings and we make decisions internally. And I'm a big part of that. I coordinate with external people outside the team that are helping with certain things and get things done. And also, I co-host and help organize the Gwendolyn's Talk Show every Thursday at 11 p.m. CEST alongside Dale the White Wolf Martell. I handle, reaching out to a guest and choosing which guest is going to be on which week.
And one of those guests was me 1 week, and it was a good time.
Oh, yeah. And we tried to, it's conflicting with Greybox's schedule, unfortunately, but we'd love to have him on.
Yeah, man, I'll give it a shot. Thursdays are tough for me. Sometimes they're hit or miss. McBeard and I actually talked about it almost right afterwards, and sometimes it's really hard for me to get free that early on a Thursday, whereas they used to be perfect.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, hey, man, if you ever, you know, if anything ever changes, let me know. We'd really love to have you.
Will do, man. Cool. They're great. I mean, I don't know if my favorite one was when Rethus was on, because it was just insanity. And I think everybody was so excited to have him on, and it was a really great episode. Or if McBeard was on, because he's the best.
I don't know. I can't hold a candle to Rethus, I think. And when it comes to guests, I think you want the devs for the real magic. Yeah, that Mulligan article was one of the lead-off efforts from the Gwendolyn website, and we'll provide that in the show notes. Of course, the site is gwendolyn.com. And when we talk about blacklisting, just really quickly, just in case somebody is listening to this podcast for the first time, it's the general idea of when you mulligan a card away out of your opening hand, you're less likely to draw that card. That is to say, you will not draw that card or a copy of that card again as you continue your mulligan. I just didn't want to let that be unexplained, I guess, in that moment.
Yeah, good catch there, McBeard. So this week, as I mentioned previously, the fourth, I think it's your fourth meta snapshot, came out today.
Yes.
And this one was authored by Vishra, who we just had on the show last week. And he's also the team's newest recruit. And I believe Grave has also sort of made a splash with his first article on the Gwendolyn site. So is there a team that works on the meta snapshot? Do you guys all get together and tell me about how you guys build up a meta snapshot, or do you guys put your efforts behind Vishra's writing and then add your own opinions? Because it's a really good article.
We take a lot of sources. Basically, we take sources from, basically we have a giant discussion between us and a bunch of other, like, you know, top players or very insightful players, and we take a bunch of feedback and we come up with a tier list, and we'd like to shift to a slightly more data-driven process in the near future, but for right now it's mostly just discussion oriented between a lot of players in the top like 200 or so. And then Vishra, in this case, ended up just writing a bunch of, you know, kind of those annotations or comments about the, you know, describing the deck and the matchups, etc.
Do you have a business background, Swim? There's some of the things you say, like some of your vocabulary seems to suggest that you have had a business background. Am I crazy?
What vocabulary?
Data-driven, stuff like that. External, no. Internal. I mean, it's like normal stuff you'd say. It's just not you, but like people would say it.
Well, I'm always listening for new words that I can use to sound smarter than I am. And those words are among them.
It's just so funny because I used to hear
those
words.
He is one of us going to thesaurus.com all the time.
Well, it is data-driven when you're looking at data. What do you think about it, dog? What do you think about it? Okay.
One of the
my
things
dog agrees.
Oh, McBeard dog.
I may have to just mute my mic for a second.
I've got a question. So
yeah,
what are the newest? So sort of the new tracker coming out is Gwent Up. And it has a lot of new features that Gwent Tracker doesn't have. And it also is doing something that nobody else has been able to do yet. And that is follow the data. It's able to track leaders and matchups and win rates and that sort of thing. So to what extent are you trying to become either involved in finding out how much you can learn from this, or is that even on your radar right now?
Honestly, not too much. I mean, I'm not too interested in it personally, although it would be very good to have something like that for a resource like the Meta Snapshots.
I was going to say, you should just literally just link the current stats for win rates versus, I mean, it would be great to say, well, Calvet's not very great against monsters, and then you see like a 31% win rate per Gwent Up, John Calvet versus any monster deck.
That is definitely true. I mean, I'm actually a little in the dark about how those stats are recorded. Does it just track the stats by people playing with Gwent Up? Like, what's the sample size exactly?
It has to be Gwent Up users only, I'd think.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure how any of the trackers do it, really.
And a large part can really be like a variation on the bracket. Like, I feel like if it's just going off of global stats at any rank, then the win rate might end up being a little bit skewed for, you know, perspective is at either both the top or the bottom, right? So, all in all, I'm slightly skeptical, but I'm very interested in looking further into it, at least for the sake of the meta snapshots.
I think if they could get the right volume of people using it and being able to, because it knows what rank you are, what position you are when you play, as Gwent Tracker also does. So if it knows that you're playing within a certain range of players, like top 1,000, just to give an example, perhaps it could parse the data like top 1,000. This is how it looks in the top 1,000, but you'd need to have most people using it, I think. That would be in that bracket to have it like an accurate sample size.
Yeah, and I'm sure like whether it happens now with Gwent Up or whether it happens later with another tracker or honestly something completely different, we will in the future, maybe near future, maybe a little ways off, have like really, really good play rates and win rates data, which isn't just going to be useful for the, you know, the snapshots. It's going to be just a great resource for the community in general. Like, people just like seeing those things.
How do you feel about trackers in general? The use of them, what they provide, the information that they give you?
I don't feel like they're unfair. I mean, there's the obvious argument that, you know, they're right now exclusive to PC players. And it is true that that's kind of imbalanced, but ultimately, I feel like they are, for the most part, a convenience rather than an actual assistance tool. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think that the trackers can warn you not to cob Roach, but you might do it anyway.
Yeah.
They're not going to prevent you from doing it. You have to pay attention, at least.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I use Cob Roach once every 2 or 3 days. Honestly, even more frequent than that. I do it. It's really, really often for anyone who ever watches my streams. And I use Tracker. So, therefore, Tracker can't really be that, you know, what's the word? It can't play the game for you or whatever.
No, yeah, right. It's a good way of putting it.
Yeah.
So, so moving beyond tracker stuff, I want to talk about just general meta stuff. So, you've seen the meta form since the beginning of the closed beta, and you've been involved in many tournaments. You've either admin them, or you've hosted them, or you've competed in them yourself. We as a player base, we know so much more about the game than we did when we did in October, like when the game first started. Have you seen a large shift in how Gwent is approached competitively, like playstyle, deck building, or like how a meta has formed, beating popular decks? Because the way when we started, when we didn't know anything, was very, very different. What would be like a really key change, perhaps, on like the approach of competitive Gwent then that may be different now?
Just in terms of like deck building and just kind of how you conceptualize the whole affair?
Yeah, maybe even how you look at like the landscape of like what you could see in a competitive meta, like what you can expect, how you would counter what you might expect, bans. Because I feel like it felt very binary before. It just felt like, okay, weather's strong, so maybe I just deal with weather, or buffs are strong, so I'll just deal with it with D-bomb. But now I feel like it's a lot more complicated now.
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, I would say the biggest difference, apart from obviously people just being generally better and people experimenting less. Not that they don't experiment, but like back in the day, it was the Wild West, you know? Like, but people, I would say the biggest difference is that there wasn't really a ranked ladder back then. Like, people, I mean, these beta brawls and the results of them was honestly one of the best indications you had of which decks were actually like proven, right? Just because there wasn't a ranked. Like, obviously you could still take them out to casuals, but it's just a little bit less reliable and you don't feel like you have as good of an idea of like what's really, really happening there. So I feel like, if anything, in terms of that aspect of it, it's a little less, I guess, exciting, just because like back then really anything could happen.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like at some points I didn't even know, like, I think I'm decent at the game, but like without the tournaments in place and with no ranked ladder, just playing casual games, it was just kind of like, I don't even know how good like other players are unless I was scrimming all the time. So yeah, the ranked ladder was a huge change for sure. That definitely helped.
Yeah, and I mean, going from the old Wild West to now, very recently we had the Challenger tournament. Do you want to kind of talk us through the Challenger tournament for you? And you were part of Vishra mentioned you guys were all testing decks, and you guys had a little group together trying to figure out how to win. And that's actually how together you guys made the Drowner deck, right?
Yes, yes. Although I had a very small part in that.
Okay.
Personally.
So how was the tournament for you?
Pretty grueling, actually. I mean, it was
long day.
Yeah, it really was. I would say, you know, it was okay. I wish I had made it a little bit further. I ended up going 4-3. I would say the biggest thing that I learned and the biggest problem that I had was I wasn't ready for the marathon that it was going to be. Like, I started 3-0, and I was doing pretty well, and then I just started making, like, sloppy mistakes just because, it's really, really hard to maintain that level of focus for more than, like, 5 or 6 hours, and I just wasn't ready for that.
Yeah, you could think that maybe, you do stream, your stream schedule, as you mentioned before, is really regular, and you stream for a good amount of time, and so it's a lot different concentrating on a high level of play in a tournament versus just streaming and talking to people and building decks and you know, I think that's something that the mental focus aspect of tournaments, and this one in particular with how long it was. I think Vishra mentioned, I think by the time they got wrapped up, it was almost 12 hours.
Yeah. No, streaming is completely opposite. Streaming is like, it's the least focused I am all day. It's like what I do to unwind.
Hey, it's good to hang out with some friends, play some Gwent.
Yeah, exactly. And this is literally the absolute opposite of that.
Yeah. So, and what decks did you bring into day one of the Challenger?
I brought my own Herald Axeman deck, which actually worked quite well. It used three Clan Brockfar Hunters and Hjalmar. Mm. It ended up being very good. It was a very control-y list. I ended up shutting out a lot of Siege Towers and Axemen with the Hunters combined with, you know, Yen-Con or maybe Archers for some stuff out early very effectively. It was a surprisingly good deck. I think Axemen are pretty decently underrated, honestly. It was a deck that performed for a lot of us very well in the tournament, and Vishra himself specifically was saying that it was doing really, really great for him. And I was also using a relatively basic Radovid deck. It looked like a full test shell with a couple Ballistas and a Radovid instead. I mean, basically, my mentality and our mentality as a group, for the most part, was to ban Squirtel and bring more control-heavy lists, because Squirtel right now is kind of oppressive of controlling strategies on ladder, and once you've banned it out, your control is always hitting targets. Like, against monsters, you're pulling out Nekkers, and against Northern Realms and Axemen, you're denying key-value growing targets. And what's the last faction? Nilfgaard? Yeah, people don't. Yeah, exactly. And then I also ended up bringing a pretty basic Squirtel list. Nothing really special there, although a little more control heavy with Nature's Gift and Archers. And then I brought a Drowner list, although I actually only used it once or twice. Me personally, I wasn't too comfortable using that list, although it did work out very, very well for Vishra and also Veler's Rouge, who made it to day two.
Mm-hmm. And your Squirtel was banned against you in every match?
Oh, no. It was banned against me in, I think, a majority of them. A few people started to ban Henselt, because I did switch to Henselt a few games in. I think in the third round, I ended up switching to using Henselt instead of Radovid. And this was a pretty standard Henselt list as well. It was Tahuti's list, more or less.
Tahuti did very well.
Yeah, it was honestly, I mean, that's kind of one of the things that took our group by surprise, just how common that Henselt list was. We were not ready for that, and we should have been.
And do you think that, just to kind of piggyback on something we've mentioned a couple weeks ago about the change to promote, do you think that was because maybe promote's better now? And so it was kind of like the change to Henselt was sort of masking the actual kind of like stealth buff to promote. And so the deck was still really great.
Yeah. Oh, it is. It is. People just had this mentality of playing it one way with, you know, like PFIs and Margarita. And it just, you know, it gets nerfed and you have to play it a different way, and people kind of dropped it when they shouldn't have. The list had a really good amount of potential, but I don't know, people tend to kind of overreact to nerfs is something that I've found for playing video games for a pretty long time.
I have to say that the change to Henselt was probably one of the softest nerfs I've ever seen. Like, 7 units is incredibly generous. Like, how often, even when you were playing Henselt at maximum capacity, like, were you not, like, if you were playing the game and you only had to hit 7 units, like, did you lose that game because you only could hit 7 units? Probably not.
Probably not, no.
You just couldn't win by 1,000. Nerf.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that deck is very scary. Everyone, and myself included, and some friends as well, but like, it's just a psychological thing. Nerfs kind of feel worse than they are, and the problem with that, as opposed to, I mean, buffs also kind of feel, you know, it's the same way. These things feel exaggerated, but when a card is buffed and, you know, you kind of try it out and you realize, oh, maybe it's not as good as I thought, but when a card is nerfed, you drop it, and then you kind of, there's never that realization, you know, like, it takes a while. It takes a couple weeks, maybe longer. for you to, for the community in general to realize that that card is still, or that strategy is still totally fine.
Well, yeah, you said so the magic word, strategy. Sorry, hey. Grayboxer. Because we can talk about, we can jump into our strategy section now, and we can talk a little bit more in depth about Scoia'tael. We've already kind of glazed over it a little bit in this opening segment, but I know that you're working on a new deck that you've wanted to talk about. So let's talk some strategy with Swim, and we're going to talk about Scoia'tael right after this.
Maybe not today and not tomorrow, but someday someone will find a way to take you down.
So not only do we have Greyboxer, the King of Dwarven Vikings, and the Toastmaster of the On Hiatus Mahaka Mondays, we also have the guy who made Dwarfs a household name. So let's talk about Scoia'tael with Swim here. How about you lead this off? Because you told me that that there's a deck that you've been trying to kind of perfect. I know you played it on stream today, Monday, and I ran into it actually yesterday when Lamios was playing it, and it seems pretty strong. What are your thoughts on this new Scoia'tael list?
I think it's pretty strong. I'm not 100% sure exactly on the composition of the list. I'm still undecided on a few things, but it is starting to look more and more very similar to the old dwarf list. It's relying on Thunderbolt Potions, Isengrim, and Nature's Gift a little more. And honestly, this kind of goes back to what I was talking about deck listing. Like, I start with a framework and I just make tweaks. And you make enough tweaks and eventually you're looking at something else. Like, I didn't actually start with dwarfs. I didn't actually necessarily want to make dwarfs good again. But all I was thinking was, you know, so You run Nature's Gift and a Glass, right? To be able to reuse them on Scorch. So my initial thought, and this was something like 2 days ago, was, okay, what if I use Commander's Horn? Because Commander's Horn is really great in the mirror. It can be copied by Nature's Gift and a Glass, allowing for a 20-point silver that enables other big silvers. And Scoia'tael often has enough units with their unit spam to be able to get that value really reliably, especially if you have something like Isengrim. And I took from that idea and I was like, okay, so I could add Mahakam Defenders to that, since, you know, they obviously have synergy with being buffed, and they're honestly decent replacements to something like Rehead Vanguards. And yeah. I basically just kept iterating, and I found myself kind of looking at my old dwarf deck. It is a possibility that it might even have Witchers at this point. I'm not sure.
I heard you on stream today asking for Crones in Scoia'tael.
Man, if Crones could be in Scoia'tael.
Oh my god.
So if you need a refresher, Swim's original dwarf list was popularized in what is known as the row stacking meta, and was probably part of creating that meta, in which Mahakam Defenders, and also removing it. I have a feeling they were probably already working on that. But you stack up your Mahakam Defenders, which at the time could persist through all three rounds. Hawker Healers could buff the entire row. Commander's Horn could also buff the entire row. And you would just stack everything on one row, buff until you just couldn't buff anymore, and hopefully get the last card in to dodge any sort of weather. I mean, there were counters, but it was still really, really hard to beat that deck in round one.
It's it was a really strong deck, and honestly, it was almost uncounterable. I mean, obviously, you could kind of counter it, but not in a great way. Like, you could swing certain things, but it felt kind of uncounterable. This variant is definitely more counterable, and I'm not sure it can remain a tier 1 deck, because it is more vulnerable to things like Dime Meridian Bomb. The old deck was able to kind of just keep pushing past, even after the D-Bomb happened. Mm-hmm. But in this case, it's still vulnerable to that, but you're generating a really ridiculous amount of strength through the Nature's Gift onto Commander's Horn, and the fact that you now have better tools to play with, which are Isengrim, Thunderbolt Potions, and possibly being able to use Ithriana Aglaeus, it's a really big deal, for sure.
Yeah, so instead of, you know, repeatedly using Scorches, you can use Commander's Horn the same amount of times, and potentially for way more value.
Yeah, that's more or less the idea.
And you add the carryover strength to that, which is your adrenaline rush units, or your Mahakam defenders, and your Yarpin, if you happen to get him out. Yeah, it's really solid. What leader are you running for this?
Slightly undecided, although it's looking like Eithne might be better than Bruver. It's a bit close between them, though.
That's something I really like about the Skoytal leaders, is that they all kind of... they interact with the deck and the board in different ways, but it's very generic. Like, there's not like a huge synergy factor between any of the leaders and any of the cards in Skoytal specifically. So depending on, like, you could run Bruver if you have a key silver, but if you're more about replaying cards as opposed to tutoring cards, if that's just, it feels like we talked about before, like a playstyle thing. It feels less like there's a correct choice. Like when you look at Nilfgaard, like Morvran is usually the correct choice unless you're building around the other leaders, but with Skoytal, yeah. Like great decks can have different leaders.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
So before everybody starts hating on Commander's Horn because somehow it's really, really great again, and everybody's using it all the time and abusing it with Aethna and Iglace and Nature's Gift and everything, can you talk to us about what some of the current things happening are with this carryover strength and Dragoon specifically? What are your thoughts on the Vrihad Dragoon and its ability to buff a unit in your hand, which is, of course, uninteractable. We don't have anything that can burn a card in your opponent's hand, nor would that feel okay. So what do you think about the way Dragoons are being played right now?
They are too strong, although it's really difficult to figure out a way to nerf them without completely gutting them at the same time. Because, like, you take away 1 point of buff and it becomes a 5+3, and suddenly that's really significantly worse, even though it might not seem like it. It's a really tricky situation. I do think that it shouldn't be completely uninteractable, for sure. I mean, I like the idea of it, I do, but it kind of can't remain in the game as it is unless there's some sort of hand disruption, I think. Or it should be counterable in terms of, like, you know, some kind of tempo. Because right now, I would say Skoytal's biggest problem, their literal number one problem, is the fact that they're kind of undisruptible. And this isn't an argument in terms of strength. Like, I'm not saying they're too strong because they're undisruptible, but I'm saying it's really bad for the health of the meta that they are so undisruptible, because there's so many very interesting cards that are kind of, you know, removal that you almost just can't run because Skoytal is not even necessarily the most prevalent deck at every stage in the ladder, but it's pretty prevalent.
Yeah. Like, and there's so many good bronzes. There's so many good bronzes you can put into a core of a Skoytal deck that, you know, like they're not doing any persistent effects. It's not like Vran or Necker or something. Like, there's like nothing you really want to lock against Skoytal. Like, now that Hawker Smugglers are kind of fading away, I feel like Hawker Smugglers the card. Yeah, that's right. Like all the good cards, like Elven Mercs, like even Vrihad Vanguards, if you're going to expand the discussion to include them. Like, generally, like, disrupting them, and they're all low strength too, so if you're looking to line up like a huge Igni or Scorch, it's harder to do that as well. So I agree with you when you say undisruptible, because a lot of the tech cards, and even Dimeridium Bomb comes to mind, as I think about putting it into my decks, but I feel like I'm still facing a majority Skoytal in which there's not a lot of opportunities to use it. All of these great tech cards against other matchups make your hand and deck very heavy in the Skoytal matchup, and it's kind of really warping which can really rise above and be very, very strong. I don't know if you agree with me on that.
Oh, absolutely. And a really, really big one is Radovid. Like, I know a lot of people were really disappointed with the Radovid change because, I mean, I think the Radovid change was very healthy, but I do absolutely agree that it shouldn't be in the state it currently is. It's a little unhealthy, or it was before, but the biggest thing about it is it just kind of can't be competitive in a meta where it's just going to be hitting 6 value a too decent amount of a time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so one of the things that you guys are getting at is that Skoytal cards, unlike a lot of the Northern Realms and Skellige or Monsters cards, is they have on-use effects that occur now. That you're hitting your Merc onto the board and it's going to spawn a special card from your deck. Play a special card from your deck. You're going to play, an Archer and it's going to do damage. You're going to play a Dragoon and it's going to buff the unit in your hand. They don't have to sit out there being waiting to be locked or thundered to have value. And so I think that the only card maybe left for Squirtle that does this is the Mahakam Defenders. The resilient units are the only ones really that are that removal target, that lock target for Squirtle. And right now, the majority of lists aren't using them.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right. And it's just, like I said, I honestly don't even think this has to do with their power. Like, I don't honestly think Squirtle is necessarily overpowered. I think they're strong in a really bad way. Like, they're maybe... Said. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
There may like be... You said you teched against you teched removal in, and then banned Squirtle. Because yeah. Removal doesn't work on Squirtle very well.
Yeah, and I don't think... I mean, there should be, like, certain archetypes maybe that are, you know, more resilient towards being removal, but I don't think they should necessarily be so good. Like, I think it should be an option for players that want to play like that, but it shouldn't have such a propensity to invade the meta as it is right now.
So we're talking about Mahakam Defenders, and we're talking about you know, some of the really strong decks that were out in tournaments, and we know consume monsters and monsters in general are very strong right now. I wanted to ask you what your opinion is on carryover strength as a strategy, and if you think that is because Nilfgaard does some of this as well with the Combat Engineer. Do you think that I feel like it's in a decent place right now, although maybe monsters have it a little bit too good with their passive, but I feel like it doesn't provide like maybe the wins all the time, but it still feels very, very strong, and it feels bad to lose against something like that where you're just pushed out of a round that you have to win, and then all of a sudden you're staring at 30 strength on the board and there's nothing you can do about it. You think that carryover strength is in a good spot right now, or do you think that it could be tuned back a little bit?
I'm not sure. I mean, honestly, like, you guys know this, you've been playing this game since October, but the one thing you can kind of extrapolate from every strong deck ever so far is that carryover value has always found a way. Like, you know, you go back a while, there was Marjo. It's all about putting value into round three, right? When Monster's passive was changed, it got a lot better because it started being about carryover value. You go back even further, you end up with, like, Golden Roaches and Ulgir that just give you value in round three. Like, that's honestly always the consistently strongest mechanic in the game. And that seems kind of... problematic. It doesn't, I don't know, I'm not sure. It's a really, like, difficult line to tread as well, because it's kind of a mechanic that does need to be in the game to some degree, I think, but it's really tricky. It's really, really tricky to have that without it being too strong.
And every faction has flirted with it at one point. You talked about Golden Botchling or Roach Ulgir, Northern Realms, and, you know, Skellige has had Morkvarg a lot of the time, has been, you know, pretty strong on most lists. Nilfgaard's got the Combat Engineer on usually a large unit of some kind. Squirtle always has dwarfs, and finally, monsters just pretty much everything they do. It's all about carryover, so at least it's kind of everywhere. Yeah, dragoons count there.
Very much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Dragoons are kind of consistent carryover. Like, they can't achieve the same value that dwarfs, but they also can't really be controlled. They're like the safe carryover.
Yeah.
And like you say, like, it's one of the most powerful things in the game, because you're getting strength in a round where you don't have to spend cards to achieve that strength. And so getting back to card advantage not mattering, if you've got high carryover strength, it doesn't matter how many cards you have back. Left if they can't beat you. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. That's exactly right. So, I mean, I don't really know what to do. I mean, you're saying if maybe it should be tweaked, and that's a tough one. Like, I'm almost inclined towards the possibility of cards like Defender and Monsters Passive only being able to carry over base strength or something like that. Almost. I mean, obviously, that would be a really major change that would have kind of far-reaching implications and other things. Maybe the values of those cards would need to be tweaked or something, but I don't know. It's definitely a tricky scenario, because it's always going to find a way to be too strong. Like, it always will.
Mm-hmm. So do you have a list on the go on GwentDB that you can post a link in the Zencast or chat right here? Because we'd like to link, at least even if it's like a work in progress and something that will evolve over time, when we do the show notes, that we would love to be able to share the deck with the listeners, I'm sure. Thunder Dwarfs.
He had it locked and loaded.
There it is. All right, that's great. Yes. So we'll be able to share that. That'll be in the show notes, and you can see whenever you look at it, it'll be as current as it is. So thanks for sharing that as well. And there's the link. Good.
Yeah, put it in there.
So Swim, do you have any? You're involved in the Gwentleman. You're on a whole bunch of different Discords. Do you have any shout outs you want to give to anybody as we wrap up our time together?
Ooh, shout outs. I'd love to give a shout out to a lot of my friends in the playtest group that Vishra and I both belong to. You know, all those guys, I talk with them a lot and I test stuff out, and you know, it's been pretty great for the last like couple of weeks. We're still like going on with stuff since the Challenger. And a couple of them are like helping me like playtest this dwarf list and stuff too. You know, and those guys would be Celerity, Mago, GX, Vaish, Velez, Rouge, Vishra himself, Lamios, Meisling, and Ordev.
That's a solid list. Great players.
And
it's a good environment to be able to come up with ideas, because I feel like I can present to them something that sounds kind of insane, and I won't necessarily get like called out for it, because it can be really hard, like kind of developing the group mentality where you have to really, really treat everything as a legitimate idea and not just kind of fall into one of those like slumps of just kind of like instantly jumping to like community-based conclusions. Like, it's so easy to dismiss a lot of cards as inviable.
Yeah, practice groups are really important to, especially for like preparation for tournaments. Like, you want to be able to have like a really good player, or a set of really good players that will play really good decks against your ideas, so you can see kind of where it lands on. So yeah. And what about your channels? Where can people find you out there, Swim?
Well, you can find me at twitch.tv/swimstrim, and I also have a YouTube channel that's a lot less intelligible. I could post it in this chat though, if you want to link it in the notes or something.
Sure. Is it also Swimstrim?
I should probably get a custom URL or something. It's just a bunch of characters. I honestly have no idea how YouTube works, if I'm being real.
I think you can kind of register a channel name, but then it's still a long link either way. But I'm sure if anybody wants to search Swim on YouTube, you'll find a bunch of content, possibly not all of his, but he'll
probably
be featured
a lot
in
of
it.
Michael Phelps.
Yeah, for sure. It's true. A lot of people swimming on YouTube. We do have the link, though, in the show notes, so check that out as well.
No, before we go, I hate to do this, but before we go, we're talking about the YouTube. We're talking about searching and finding swimming. Tell us about your new series. You're working on swimming classes, right?
Swim school. I am. Yeah. Swim school. Ah, God, I'm getting so many projects that are getting pushed back. Swim school is going to be a series of really robust guides. I want to have them really, really good and in depth. I plan on having some basic ones, of course, too, for newer players, but it's going to be a lot of work, and I don't know when I'll have the series started, but it definitely should be in the next month.
Excellent. The ambition. That, man.
It's the ambition. That's what matters.
Yeah. I'm trying to make them perfect and just like really, really in depth. And it's actually these scripts, they're going through, you know, all sorts of rewrites. Mm-hmm. I feel like George R. R. Martin.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's you gotta.
The series will come out before we die.
Doing videos can be tough sometimes. There are some times where you just really want to write an audio essay for yourself to read on a camera, and sometimes that's the best way to do it. But you know, it's always good to take the time and get that stuff right. You want to be proud in the content you present, and you should be. You're a really good streamer and a good player, and we're very happy to have had you on the podcast today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. Yeah, I'm a big fan of, you know, I love you guys are great.
You got there, man.
I can't be on anything without a really awkward ending. It's honestly, it just can't really happen.
So we'll pause for a very awkward pause for no reason at all.
No, yeah, we'll seems good.
Get the hook, McBeard.
Get the hook. No, seriously, great to have you. And I'm sure we'll run into each other again sometime. We tend to.
Oh yeah, no, I hope so. I look forward to it.
Thanks so much for Swim joining us in the studio, and of course, thanks to everyone for listening. Once again, you can find us on Twitter at Commander's Horn, and you can email us at commandershornpodcast@gmail.com. Again, we would love to know what your favorite artwork is in the game. Greyboxer, where could people find you?
You can find me at GreyboxerGwent on Twitter, Greyboxer on YouTube, and also Greyboxer on Twitch.
And you can find me at McBeardCH on Twitter, McBearded on Twitch, and McBeard on YouTube. So thanks so much for joining us today, folks.
And until next time, this is Greyboxer.
And this is McBeard.
Best of luck
on the path.